And so we too are to be preachers of the gospel. Now, I want to move from this science that we've tried to look back and show of development of a sermon. Now we get to the presentation and the art side of this, what the scientist does of becoming an artist. And I want to talk to you about four things, and they're all there on your outline, I think, and we'll see those together. First of all, I want to just say a few words about your voice, Now, Bob helped me understand that the two books I showed you, Dr. Vines, they've now been put together in one volume. Bob, do you know the title of that? Power in the Pulpit. So those two books have been put together in one, The Power of the Pulpit. And in that, the second half of the book, when he talks about the art of sermon delivery, it was on page 2 and 3, the very introduction of that second book. Dr. Vines takes you on a journey of your voice box. It is a phenomenal read, and just knowing about how the vocal folds work. And so knowing how to take care of your voice. Know about your voice. You ought to be a study of it. Know about breathing from your diaphragm. Sarah, the young lady that sang for us, I think, earlier this morning. Susan singing. And I couldn't help, because I had this on my mind, and as I was looking, she was little bitty lady over here, and she's behind me. She had on that top that has stripes around it, and I noticed that she was singing. It caught my eye that from her diaphragm she was breathing properly, because I could see those bottom two stripes. They would move a little bit as she would breathe the right way. I thought, she knows what she's about. She knows how to force that air out. And man, for a little lady early in the morning in a cold room, she was wonderful. I'd like to hear an afternoon in a hot room. That'd be really good to know what she does. Man, she blessed my heart this morning. But there's this art. And my wife is really a marvelous singer, and has been, sang a cappella choir at Samford University and all those things, and sings a lot. And she's helped me a great deal. I for years, I'd lose my voice. I mean, all I knew from growing up in North Alabama. I mean, man, if you could hear yourself on Monday morning, you just hadn't been anointed of God. You know, you needed to learn how to give it all and lay it out there. Well, you got to take care of your voice. Evaluate your voice. If you tape your messages, listen to yourself. I will not listen to myself in the presence of anyone else. That's tough for me. I don't do it. We televise our services on Saturday afternoon at 5 and Sunday morning at 11. So oftentimes on Saturday afternoon, I will go in a place with television. I'll watch the message as it's broadcast. And oh my, I don't get under conviction very much. I get embarrassed a lot. But I'm trying to learn in the way of use of my voice. I encourage you with your voice to study others. Now, you shouldn't try to talk like someone else. If you've seen me today, I have several characteristics. People, of course, my hair, only 4% of the people in the world have hair this color. A lot of ladies these days try to have hair this color, but it doesn't work unless God gave it to you. But I have that. I have a right ear that sticks out. And down in Florida, I call it my Bobby Bowden ear, because he was always wide right for all those years. And I've got this ear that sticks out over here. Then I have a broken finger. I played a couple years of junior college basketball. I've been in sports a lot, and I've broken this finger several times, and so it doesn't bend very well. And oftentimes when I will gesture, I will do this. And when I was in Texas, everybody thought I was a UT fan that I was, giving them that. But that wasn't it at all. And then I had one of my young preachers that I saw one time, and he was preaching, and I saw him, and he did like this. And I went to him, and I said, what are you doing? He said, what do you mean? I said, why are you pointing like this? He said, well, it's the way you do it. I guess the way I do it. I said, I have a broken finger. I said, straighten that thing out. Point, be who you are, all right? Well, I'm not asking you to be like I am, but you do learn from others in listening to them. I used to listen to a lot of sermons just to get pacing. It's amazing what can happen when you just do get quiet in the room. And it almost draw attention back. And so the listening to others and watch their pacing. Now, some of us, we just don't have the voice that a lot of these great guys have. But God's given you a voice. I do a lot of things on radio with on the CNN station down our church owns it, so he lets us advertise free on CNN Radio in Pensacola. And he's just a master of using the radio. And he got one of my commercials, and then he fixed it, kind of, yes, I don't know with you, but he lowered the register, and he brought me back. He said, Pastor, I want you to listen to this. And man, it was like Dr. Adrian. I mean, it was down here, you know, man. It was good. I said, that's good. Can we do this on Sunday morning? We can tune me down some way. But you're not going to try to be somebody else, but you can learn from them and then be yourself. But there are certain things of just listening to others that you'll learn. Then you need to improve your voice and your speech. Taking care of it is one thing, learning, but then improving. I told you about Dr. Reginald Stokes and how he laughed at me. He gave us an exercise, and I'd like to give it to you. And if you're like me, being from the country, I had to do that. He put these words on the board, and I want to ask you to do what he had us do. He wrote up here, M-E-T, and he said, say this word, and it is met. And then he wrote this word, L-E-T, and it is let. And then he wrote G-E-T, and it is get, right? It's met, let, get. That's the way you do it. And, well, he helped me. I didn't know. And that lazy jaw of dropping off the G's on singing or singing, and the them or the them, and learning. Now, it's hard for me because I've heard all of that all my life. That's how I talk, and that's just who I am. But to try to enunciate, and I don't want to have a preacher voice. I've you know, you listen to those guys, and what planet are they from? And, you know, you just help me be real here. But there is a way to improve your speech pattern. Nathan Robinson, who's in here, is one of our students, and his father, who is my dear friend Terry, who has been in New York for over 25 years. When we were in high school, and Terry surrendered to preach, he had a lisp, and it was difficult on some sentences even to understand. And he worked so hard, and he took voice and speech, and man, God so blessed him and anointed him. And improved. But I'm telling you where it came from is that he had to get in the laboratory of learning to make that tongue work and enunciate. And now, of course, he does wonderful, but he had to work. And I thought, Lord, if I would work as hard with what you gave me as he worked with what he had, I would be a better communicator if I learned and worked. And so doing that helps us a great deal. Study your voice, evaluate it, study others, self-improvement. And as Bob said, I mentioned, I always find it one of the best ways is just to read the scriptures aloud, to practice before Sunday, whatever your text, in front of a mirror, maybe in your pulpit, but to practice reading the scriptures so that people can understand the Word of God. And it's a great way of just improving your voice. Now, you've also got to take care of your voice. One thing that Dr. Reginald Stokes told me on a Sunday morning, he said, son, let me tell you, never drink milk products before you preach. And I said, why? He said, it puts a film on your vocal folds. He said, you need whatever you like, maybe hot tea or some coffee with no cream. Or he also said, if you're going to keep water there, drink tepid water while you're speaking, something very cold. If you're warm, that cold, it may taste good, but he said it puts your vocal folds in shock for a moment when that icy water hits you. You know how you get an ice cream headache sometimes? You get that same way your vocal folds that are there. And so taking care of that in what you drink, you need plenty of rest for your voice. And if you're if you preach hard and if you preach multiple services, Saturday night is very important. Boy, I have to watch myself in the fall. My son plays football on Friday night. He starts at center. We got beat 29-28 last Friday night. Fumbled the ball going in the end zone with 2:30 to go. Tailback had a touchdown, made a spin move, dropped the ball, went into the end zone. The other team got it. Came out to the 20, drove the ball down, scored with 22 seconds to go. Kid went for two and beat us 29-28. The next day, I went to the Alabama-Arkansas game. It was raining, the game hour and 10 minutes late starting, that thunderstorm, and I'm sitting there. Alabama jumps out 21 points ahead. If you watched any of it, Arkansas comes back, beats them in double overtime. Now, let me tell you, when I got to church on Sunday morning after driving back from Tuscaloosa on what was supposed to be a day game started late, and I got home at midnight, and I'd just screamed the night before, now I've been to the ball game, my voice was not in real good shape. I have to watch myself. I have to take care of it. If you're going to a ball game, you got to, man, my kid's playing, I'm going to get with it, but at the same time, I've got to save something for Sunday. Your attire has to do with that. Dr. Stokes helped us understand sleeping in a draft, if you're always having head colds or whatever. Learning when I was seminary, of course, hopefully your housing is better than I was at seminary, but man, in the winter, that is cold, and those windows, he said, don't put the head of your bed by the window, put it on the other side of the room, especially if you're in a cold climate and you sleep, but if you're constantly getting a head cold, and how to keep yourself well and warm. Having a good sound system. Our folks, they've been taking good care of us. My soul. Next, you know when the devil fell that he fell in the choir loft, and next to the choir leader, the sound man is where the devil falls. I mean, you know, you just get all this screaking and carrying on, and is it turned on or off? And so we try to pray and ask God to give us a good sound system, knowing how to wear your microphone, where to put it. If you're going to wear one of these, of course, Dr. Vine uses this all the time. He won't hardly wear the lavalier. He likes this where he can get away from it. Your style, your way, but your sound engineer, you ought to be a good friend. Talk to him about how your voice works, if it drops out, and all of those things. But a good sound system helps you, and if you can afford that and are able to do it, that will help your voice immensely in having a good system. If you build a new building, don't you dare. Don't dare. Let somebody else put the sound system in unless you've got input into that. For the preaching of the gospel, you need to know about the acoustics and all that's going on in that room. So be very careful. Dealing with our voice, and that's part of who we are in the art of preaching. Now, secondly, I want to pick up, Bob talked about one of the words that's all there on your list, and that is the word imagination. Imagination. Now, there's a whole lot in Scripture that is negative about this word. But we're not talking about things that are imaginary. We're talking about your sanctified imagination. And oftentimes, I think we move away from imagination because we do find in Scripture some things that seem to be negative about even the demonic divination around this. But what we're talking about is simply thinking and being creative. Now, some people have an imagination like a glacier. Moves very slowly. Some people have an imagination like a sewer, and it is sick. What you need is an imagination like a river, where the flow is coming, and there is new life that is being given with imagination. This has all to do with how you package the truth for your people. We live in such a visionary culture today. When you watch a 30-minute sitcom, there's 7 minutes of that given to commercials. And in between, in that sitcom, there are going to be two segments of just a few minutes long. You're going to get about 8 minutes. You're going to get a commercial package. Then you're going to get about 8 more minutes and a commercial package. And then you're going to get the conclusions. They come back and bang. It's right at the end. Now, if we think our folks are not watching Friends and Seinfeld and The West Wing and all of those shows, but they don't stay there looking forever and ever and ever. There's a transition in that and the imagination that is there. And if you're going to communicate to your people, you better know. I'm telling you, R.G. Lee is a masterful preacher of his generation. But I'm here to tell you, Dr. Lee would have a hard time in our generation. Have a very difficult time going an hour and 15, 20 minutes using all of those flowery words that he... I mean, people went there for... it was like the stage in the arts thing, but I'm telling you, we are in a different world. The IMAG that we put up, vision, things that are there. If you have opportunity to do that, I encourage you to do it. I keep a fill-in-the-blank just like I've got there in front of you. I put that in our worship guide every Sunday with just a few things to fill in, people taking notes, they remember what they see. It just helps the connection with that, helps the imagination. I mean, Jesus, what a master at imagination, the parables and the stories. and all through the Word of God and how He painted these pictures for us to see. And we can remember them even now. When I say parable, you can just name them. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, and the stories that come back to us. If you've got your Bible, I want you to quickly go to Proverbs 14:4. I want to show you one of my favorites. It was one that God just dropped on me a few years ago. It is the sermon I preach second the second most preached sermon that I have is out of Proverbs 14:4. And I've done this, probably preached this sermon 25, 30 times. I read Proverbs almost every day, and I've always thought Proverbs 14:4 had a word hit, and I wasn't sure. It says, where no oxen are, the manger is clean, but much increase comes by the strength of the ox. I always read that, and I go, what's that mean? You can read the King James a little different. Then I went down, I have a Thompson chain, a Ryrie study Bible here today, and down in the bottom, Charles Ryrie writes a little footnote, and I always kid my people, now you understand that up here's what God said, down here's what Ryrie said, and there is a difference. Don't live below the line, live above the line, but there is something about the commentary that is there that sometimes is helpful. Here's what Dr. Ryrie wrote about Proverbs 14:4. He said, there is no milk without some manure. That's right here in the Bible. Some disturbance is the price of growth and accomplishment. Boy, that registered with me as a picture. And I said, you know, if your church is going to grow, there's going to be some manure. There's going to be growth. There's going to be oxen in the barn and calves being born. And there's going to be some disturbance. I have a message I preach out of this entitled, Grab a Shovel. Somebody has to clean out the barn. And then I go to the book of Acts with the church at Antioch and all of the changes that were going on in the new church. And there is, if the church is going to grow, there's the disturbance of new believers coming. The Greeks and the Jews got together. There have been a disturbance of blacks and whites in your church. Well, it's going to be a change of culture. Talk about a change of leadership. All of a sudden, Peter's on the way out and Paul's on the way in. There's a new pastor on the scene. Somebody better grab a shovel. And so I paint that picture. And you can ask my people. We talk about this text from time to time. And you use your imagination and you let that move and things that are there. We use some props from time to time in sharing a message. A few weeks ago, we're in 40 Days of Purpose, I was using the purpose-driven, right? And everything's got a purpose. So I talked about staples. Talked to one of my surgeons, and I said, now if I say the word stapler, if you're a secretary, you think of stapling paper. If you're a builder, you think about a stapler to staple tar paper on a house. Use a stapler or a staple gun to drive nails. But I said, if you're a surgeon, you think about putting sutures in that are staples. And I had one of these staple guns that they use in surgery. I said, you can use a stapler on a desk, you use a staple gun, or I had this deal for sutures. And all of a sudden, I'm telling you, our kids hang on to that. It makes a point with them. When you talk about everything has its purpose. But don't try to do surgery and then sew me up with a staple gun. You're going to nail me to the gurney. Don't be doing me that way. You've got a purpose. You're tailor-made for something. And so using your imagination, maybe with props from time to time, whatever that it is you use. But your imagination is very, very important. Third word when it comes to this art of preaching, on your voice, on your imagination. Thirdly is your body. Your body is so very important. Four things about your body. I submit that the most important part of your body in preaching are your feet. Your feet. And I say that because I have a hard time listening to people that are nervous. And if you are nervous, it'll show up first in your feet. You ever see a nervous quarterback when he's in the pocket? He can't, he knows where to go, but he's moving. You ever get around a preacher that's nervous and he's always moving, but he's not going anywhere and he's got his hands in his pockets and he's walking. Let me tell you, if you're going somewhere when you preach, then go there. If you're going to be a peripatetic prophet, it's okay to walk. But know that your feet, every gesture means something. And if you begin to move around, your nerves will show from the feet up. Okay, so be very careful with your feet. That leads to your shoes. Now hear me, guys. If you're preaching, usually you're on a platform up here like this. Your people are down where you are, one of the first things they see, your shoes. We have two rules at Olive Baptist Church if you sit on the platform. Number one, you never cross your legs when you sit on the platform. Never. There's a fine for that. Secondly, if you sit on the platform, you do have your shoes polished. You do not go on the platform, that's shoes. I learned that when I was 13 years old, getting on the bus, going to play basketball for Paul Cooley. I cannot tell you the times that he has made us go back in and say, boys, if you won't shine your shoes, you can't make a bounce pass, and if you won't take care of your shoes, you can't play for me, and he sends you back in the locker room. He kept an old black shoe polish in there, and we had to shine our shoes before we could get on the bus. Attention to detail. You say, well, I'm making a difference. Let me tell you, it's part of the art. It's part of the art of preaching. And so as you have your shoes, they don't have to be $200 shoes, but they can be clean. And you know, if you're Rick Warren, you don't have to wear socks. Whatever your culture. But let me tell you, if you're going to wear sandals when you preach in that kind of culture, you better have your toenails clean. I mean, it's just part of the art of it. There's a look to that. I call here and ask, what am I to wear when I speak there? And they said, casual is fine. That's why I came like I came today. I wanted to know what is acceptable. What's attire? What is the acceptable attire? Anywhere I go preach, if they want me to preach in a golf shirt, sometimes I will do that, sometimes not. I've always found if I dress just a little ratchet above the norm, I'm usually better off. I don't come, if they said casual, I didn't want to come in shorts and a t-shirt. You want to be a little ahead. Because that visual is so important that if they're looking and wondering about you, they've lost what you're saying. So it's part of the arts side. We had a gentleman came preach for us one Sunday, and he lost all his clothes on the airline, and he came in and he preached. One of my guys, because he told it right at the end, he said, I apologize at the end of his sermon for being like this. He said, but they lost my clothes. We had to kind of dress him on the fly before we got him there. One of my guys came and said, preacher, I got to repent. As a matter of fact, I want to give a little extra today. I said, what are you talking about? He said, man, I was so mad. I didn't hear a word that guy said. I thought surely he could wear a tie if he's going to preach at our church. Then I found out he didn't even have one. I said, yeah, you ought to get 20% today for a stinking attitude like that. But, you see, it just took away his attention because of the side of the way he looked. Your feet, very important. Secondly, gesture. You got to know what to do. You know, the classic old thing is the guy preaching there said, when the roll is called up yonder, I'll be there. Well, you don't want to do that, you know. If the roll is called up there, you don't want to be there. You want to be up there. So know what you're doing with a gesture, what to do with your hands. And from time to time, it can even help, but it is far and away exception to the rule that you ever put this in this. Okay? There can be a time. Dr. Olford is my mentor, and he has a deal of hooking his thumb right here. I'll see him do that from time to time. I've watched everything he's done, and I'll see that. And Dr. Johnny Hunt, now he'll preach. I don't know what he does, but he grabs his money clip or whatever's in his britches right here. He does that a lot. I that's what he does. Dr. Charles Stanley, you know, he takes that lapel and he'll say, now listen, and he'll hold that lapel. And every time he says listen, he touches it. I go, something's coming. You know, it's going to be good right here because he said listen. Hell, you know, but that's who they are, and that's good. But know that your gestures are so important. And what you do with your hands, the way you move, where you go, your clothes, I've already talked about that. But number four, the most important, deal with your body, your eyes. Your eyes. Boy, Dr. Vines, this just grates on him, and I've talked with him about it. He wants to know why so many singers sing with their eyes closed. He said it's the most communicative thing you have are your eyes. He said, what if we preach for 40 minutes with our eyes closed? Just I said, well, number one, you'd walk off the stage if you did that. I said, you'd have to preach without notes, wouldn't you? Yeah, amen. But he said, oh, well, you just look out and look, and you make connection. You know, there's just, I have one of my camera operators, he's center out, right back here. His wife works for us. He's been unfaithful, an adulterer. And we began to deal with him, and all of a sudden, he wasn't at church. And my little girl came to me, she said, Daddy, so-and-so said he quit coming to church. And I said, well, why is that? He said, well, you preached on adultery the other Sunday, and he said that you looked right at him when you preached that. And he just left. She said, I told him that, you wasn't doing that on purpose. I said, well, darling, you were wrong. I was looking right through that camera. I knew where he's looking. He needed to hear me. Well, preacher, you ran him off. Maybe I did. I tried to communicate every other way, and I'm telling you, your eyes are powerful. They are powerful. Well, don't just look everywhere. Look at your people. Love them. Boy, you can love them with your eyes. Can you communicate, if you're married, can't you communicate to your wife your eyes without saying a word? I can tell you this, she can communicate to you without saying a word, can't she? Yeah, she can say right now, out of this room, we are leaving here now. It's just, that's all it takes, boy. They can put it on, you can do the same when you begin with your eyes. It's so important. Well, your voice, your imagination, your body. And then spend just a quick moment, because Bob has just so eloquently done this for us, and that is, of course, the spiritual aspect and of who we are. And I want to give you just four things and then two quick illustrations in this regard. Four things in the spiritual aspect of the art of preaching. Number one, walk with God. We must walk with the Lord, being clean before Him. I'm amazed at the preachers that we find out they've got sin in their life and how powerful they were, even when they were walking in adultery and what God was doing. Can you imagine what God would have done if they'd have been clean? See, growing churches and walking in this stuff, walk with God. Number two, love your people. Love your people. Bob's talked about that. We've got to love them. President Kennedy years ago made this statement, and for me it's become very important because I'm not good at this. But he said, always walk slowly through the crowd. Walk slowly through the crowd and touch the children. I found to be very important. I didn't say touch the teenage children, but touch the children. They love to love the pastor. And there'll come days when they'll quit talking to us, but they'll come back around. But to love the children, boy, how that helps our folks to know that we love them. I'm an only child. I never had anybody growing up to fight with. Our family's very nonverbal. I've had to learn to do that. It's very hard for me. My wife asked me the second year we were married why I didn't love her anymore. I just didn't know how to say I love you. I didn't know how to communicate and say, honey, thank you for a great meal. I was just not a great communicator one-on-one. That came to the church, and I've had some people to, just say, he's just kind of cold and sterile. With us. Well, I've had to work at that, and it's hard for me, but just to spend time and love on your people. And the touch is very important. Shake a hand, put your arm around them, and put on their shoulder. A young lady that came right here, she's one of my little girls in church growing up. Her daddy was on staff, and now here she is at Union. I didn't even know her. She looked at me, and I said, I'm supposed to know you, but I can't. She told me her name, and I hugged her. I said, man, you go and kiss your mama and tell her hello and hug your dad for me. Boy, that comes so unnaturally to me, but I found that touch really communicates when it's a way of loving on your people. What a great preparation it is for them to hear you. Number three is your spiritual preparation. So much of your preaching comes out of your own heartbreak. When your heart's broken, a lot of your pathos comes out of that part of your preaching when your heart's broken. And then number four is just out of your convictions, out of your own convictions. There'll be places you'll just take a stand. I'll give you two illustrations along the spiritual aspect side, and then we'll take a few questions here to wrap up. I've quoted Dr. Criswell a time or two, I've read a couple of biographies. There's a new one coming out that Dr. Paige Patterson is writing. I can't wait for it to be out. I don't think it's out yet. I haven't seen it, but he's supposed to get it out. And not like he's had anything to do moving over to Southwestern, but he's going to have that book out. Looking forward to reading what he says about his hero, one of our great prophets. But in reading biography of Dr. Criswell, when he was a seminary student, Southern Seminary, he tells this story. I've heard him tell it. I've asked him about it, and then read it in two different books. Where when he was there as a seminary student, and all these guys were preaching at different places, he was preaching out some, and the guys came to him and said, Criswell, as long as you preach like you preach, you will never get a county seat church. The way you holler and rant and scream, and you'll never get a county seat church. And it really pierced his heart, crushed him. And he went to the voice teacher, the drama teacher at the school, and he said, would you help me? And she said, well, I will do all I can. What can we do? And she said, well, first let me evaluate you. You come and you preach for me. And she took him in a little chapel, in a room that in my mind's eye, as Bob talked about, and they paint these pictures, I always see it as a room even smaller than this. And Dr. Criswell went and stood at the little pulpit, and she said, what I want you to do is just preach. I'm the only one in the room. I want you to just be yourself and preach. And he said, I took my text, John 3:16, and I preached to her like I was preaching to 10,000. And if you've ever heard him, if you're young and hadn't, I hope you'll go to wjcriswell.com, as I mentioned, and there you can get him on video on there, and you can hear him preach, see him preach. And that he just tore it up like he always does with that big, loud voice, just ba-boom. I'll never forget, he came to Samford University the first time I heard him. He walked up to the microphone and he said, I'm sorry, you can't hardly hear me. My right lung is really giving me trouble, and I don't know if the right lung is collapsed or what. But my left lung is okay. And man, we did that, you know, that's the way he was. And we just, whoa. Of course, that's the way he preached. And it just boom and thunder. And when he got done, the lady came to him and said, Mr. Criswell, I don't know if you'll get a church. I don't know what will happen with your life. And she said, whatever you do, never stop being who you are. Because even though they may not give you a church, if you will preach as you preach today, they will give you a hearing. And he pastored a pretty good county seat church for some 44, 45 years and did okay. But he said 1,000 times, be who you are. And if I could tell you anything, be who you are. As you take all of the tools you can get from what little we would say today, as well as with other things you're reading, know, be yourself. Out of your heartbreak, and I tell you this and I'm done. It's 1996, the hardest year I ever had in my life as a preacher. I wanted to quit. I'd had to fire a minister of music, been in our church 24 years. Tried to get him to move to a different position. I tried everything I knew to do, and it just wouldn't work. I even told the leadership, I'll resign, I'll go somewhere else if y'all want to keep him. And they said, no, preacher. And so we walked through, and make a long story a little shorter, we asked him to leave, gave him 1 year severance pay. He left. One of my elderly deacons said, the only thing slip I got 2 weeks, preacher. I don't understand this. I said, well, this is not the plant. This is the church. So we paid him a year severance, and he left. You may not believe this, but I had some people who really got angry with me. And they got mean. So I didn't know what to do, but I came home late one night. I'd gotten mail. They were going to burn my house down. I'd gotten mail written to my wife, called her Jezebel. Hey, these people got nasty. I found this. I found the loudest booze came in the cheapest seats. They got on me pretty hard. I came home one night. There were three men sitting by my mailbox, and I thought, they'd come after me. I went outside, and I saw them, and they were three of my dearest friends. I said, guys, what are y'all doing? And they said, well, preacher, we've taken a little trip. Did you ever read 2 Samuel 23? I said, well, I've read the whole Bible, but I don't have it memorized. Help me. And they said, what's when David was in the cave over Adullam, the Philistines coming against them. I said, oh, yeah. And I said, it was in there. And three of the guys heard David say he wanted a drink of water from Bethlehem. I said, yeah. And they snuck out and went down to Bethlehem, got the gourd and brought the drink of water. I said, well, we've heard you tell us about that artesian water up in North Alabama that you used to drink as a kid just flowing out of the ground. I said, yeah. I said, well, we got up this morning, 5:45. We drove 305 miles from Pensacola to Pisgah, Alabama. We asked your mom and daddy after we met with them for a little while if they'd let us have a drink of water from your Bethlehem. And they filled up a quart fruit jar and brought me a drink of water from my Bethlehem. Drove 6 hours up, stayed 2 hours with my parents, drove 6 hours back, waiting on me for about an hour. And they'd spent a little over 14 hours that day. Man, we had revival in the yard. I said, guys, you better go. And I said, well, one of the things you told us when God calls you to preach, as I opened with this morning, when you were 17, you used to go out there on this big rock overlooking the Tennessee Valley, and you could see the Tennessee River running. I said, yeah. Pisgah Gorge, I'd go out there, and I'd lie down my Bible, just get on my stomach, and I'd just say, oh, God, I don't know much, but you've called me to preach, and I want to be a preacher. Well, preacher, we went out and had your daddy take us as close to that place as he knew. We took a hammer, and we broke off 2 pieces of that rock. We brought you 2 big pieces of it back and want you to plant it out in the yard. If you ever get discouraged, go put 1 foot on one rock, one on another, and say, God, this is where you called me. And I want you to sustain me. Not many mornings I don't look out my bedroom window, Brother Bob, and see those 2 rocks. That's where God called me. That's where I tried to stay. They brought me some flowers from up there, rhododendron that grows. It's against the law to cut them. I told them, I said, guys, y'all go to jail for this and get fined. They said, well, our preacher told us it's easier to get forgiveness than it is permission, so we just went ahead and did it. And I have a picture on my credenza of those flowers. And they said, preacher, if you'll let Jesus be your Lord, he'll be the fresh flower of your soul every day of your life. They said, we're willing to die for you, preacher. And that's what they told me. They said, we don't want to hear anything. We're willing to lay down our life. We're going to stand with you. Guys, I've taken that passage and told that story, and I've got a sermon called Three Mighty Men and have characteristics of the men that are there in 2 Samuel 23. And I cannot tell you how many men have been touched. Or some in this very room came to me and told me, preacher, I heard that Fred Shocko over here, and I've preached it again and again and again in revival meeting. All I'm here to tell you is there is power in preaching. When you preach, when you preach truth, when you do it in humility and simplicity and the authority of God with a touch of, I'm telling you, God will change people forever through you. I don't get anything out of that sermon. I had 2 guys come right down here in the break told me about that. So what I do is I get home this afternoon, probably call one of them from the airport here in a few minutes, and I always call those 3 men and say, guys, another crown for you in heaven. It's your sermon. I just get to be the messenger that God did that day. What an encouraging word. So many people need encouragement today. And just to lift up those souls. Boy, it goes a long way. So I encourage you, even when you're down at your lowest, preach, preach, preach. When you feel like it, when you don't feel like it, until you do feel like it, preach the word. Instant in season, out of season. Reprove, rebuke, exhort with all long suffering and with doctrine. Preach the word. Well, Brother Bob and I are here. Anything you want to ask about right quick? We're 3:15 was my time to be done. Here it is, 16 after. I apologize. Anything you'd just like to ask about, we'd be right here to say a word or two, and then we're going to need to get, I know you guys got to go. You want to ask about reading, didn't you? He and I forgot all about that. He want to ask about outside reading. I read a great deal about leadership because that's kind of where I live in that vein now. That's kind of the area where I do, and I read a good bit of history, and that's because I like it, and it also illustrates so well. McCullough's book on Truman, the one on John Adams, a lot of history, and that's kind of where I read. Bob, where's your reading path? Are you going to publish this about Vance, or is it just your PhD work? Or? Boy, I encourage you to do it for us. Man, what a good thing. I bet Dr. Dockery would fund it if you'd publish it. Amen. Yes, sir. Rule of thumb. Well, for me, I'm certainly in the new more than I am the old. I would say my rule of thumb is probably about what Bob was saying a while ago, probably 3-1, about like he's doing right now. And those, I don't know how you do all that. My soul, to preach. I do try to annually go back and take a look at what I've done through the last 12 months and see if I'm out of kilter somewhere. And you know, maybe a year ago, by he said, well, you just didn't touch the Old Testament enough. And I try to drive myself back that way some, so I try to evaluate that. But I'm certainly in the new more than I am the old for me. Yes, sir, and then in the back. I don't name the lodge. I deal with that one-on-one when I have it. I do deal with it sometimes in principle. And there are other things that I do call by name, but I think there's two things there, and Bob would be much better to speak to this probably than myself, but I do believe that with some of these issues, there must be, you've got to have been there long enough to earn the right to say some things. And there are some things, you can say it whenever you want to, but you'll be hunting somewhere to go. But there's another time you earn the right, and the coins are in your pocket, to speak to certain issues. I don't know, Bob.